Yeah. Here we go.
Set?
Well, today is June 1st, 2011, and my name is Heather Sholane, and I'm here with Melody, my sister.
I'm Melody.
And we're interviewing our mother, Barbara Millat Smith. We have a few
questions. Can say something.
All right. Well, I'm alive, very much. Just had a good lunch over at Heather's house across the street.
Well, I thought it would be kind of interesting just to get started here, to talk about your days as a Red Cross girl.
No.
And I'm just wondering, how old were you when you decided to sign up as a Red Cross girl?
Well, I had just graduated from university, Northwestern University.
What was your major?
23. I was a music major. And do you want me to tell you how I happened to go into Red Cross?
Yeah, what made you decide to do that?
Well, I wanted to do my part. The World War II was going on when I was in college. And every now and then, quite often, that somebody would not show up at school. And we'd say, well, where's Jim or Bob or so-and-so? And somebody would say, well, his number came up. He's gone off to service. Just like that, when your number comes up, you go. And so after I graduated and it was still going on, I wanted to do my part to participate, help in this war. And I considered the WAC and the WAYS. Well, I don't think the WAYS were taking women. Anyway, I don't know how I heard about Red Cross. This particular group of people, it's not anything to do with the medical or nursing of Red Cross. It was, you had to be a college graduate with a major in either music, drama, or physical education. Huh. Well, is that enough, or shall I tell
you? Well, so you decided to sign up. I always wondered what happened when you went home and told your parents. Or did they know you were planning
this? Yes, I announced to the family. I'm going to go overseas. Oh, you are, Bob. Okay, pass the butter. And that's about the way it went. Yeah.
You mean they didn't believe you?
Well, no? I guess they did, but they weren't. my brother had already been overseas. My sister was home. And that's about the way it went. Well.
So she wasn't married yet, Joyce?
No, she was not. Okay, well.
Where was Uncle Al serving?
He was over in the Pacific, in the islands. I'm trying to think if he was home at that time, mm-hmm. because see that went afterwards after the boys were through in Europe, but he was over in the Solomon Islands and. He really saw action, more so than I did in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well, so then you signed up with Red Cross, and then were you just given like a few weeks to prepare to ship
Well,
out?
I went downtown. I was interviewed in the downtown office, and they said, we want you to go down to the headquarters in St. Louis. So I boarded a little plane. I was kind of new in flying then. And so I went down to St. Louis.
From Chicago,
uh-huh.
from Evanston.
Mm-hmm. And I was interviewed by, in St. Louis. And I tell you, that was some interview. Because they wanted you to know what you were getting into. And they showed us movies of war and where we were going. They talked to us. They told us.
Trying to get rid of the
lightweights. Yes, yes, that's exactly it. Exactly it. And they really wanted to clean out. This wasn't going to be any picnic. Anyway. I had some notes I might get.
Is it this one?
Those cards.
Oh, here.
Cards.
These.
Well, okay, so.
Yeah, I was trying to remember what they had us do, but I'll tell you, they made it very abundantly clear that it was not going to be any easy picnic, and so we were typical college girls that had an ability to entertain on our own, either music, drama, or physical education. And we had to be able to go into a situation. We were not the USO. USO were professional actors and entertainers who would bring a completed show into an area and then do their act. We had to make up our act. We had spontaneously and unrehearsed.
Hmm. Well, so what was it? So then you went home, packed up.
Yeah.
And then you had to, how was the crossing when you had to go overseas to Italy then?
Well, they told us we didn't know whether we were going to the South Pacific or to Europe. So we didn't know how to pack.
Oh.
Exactly. So I went to Washington, and we still didn't know. And it wasn't until we were issued our uniforms in Washington. We went to Washington University, there in Washington, D.C. And it was quite exciting to be there.
Yeah.
Golly, what you would see going on, and service people, and marching, anyway, it was exciting to be in Washington. And then I was issued a winter uniform and a summer, so I knew that I was going to Europe, not to the South Pacific.
Oh, it would be cold, okay.
Yeah.
Now, did you go with any girls from home?
No.
So you were pretty much on your own?
I kind of took off. Mom went down to the train station with me, and I got on the train on my family. And what are you doing to my broadcast?
Sorry, she was feeling very moved.
That's right.
So then, let's see.
No, wait a minute. So you get on this huge, what was it, a freighter? It was a boat.
I was in Washington, and then I went out to, I got some training. They gave us training about.
I remember hearing.
Yeah.
Didn't you have to do some jumps off a boat or something?
Oh, yeah.
What was that about?
Yeah. We didn't jump off the boat. But, yes, we had to learn how to escape. We were taken down to, what was that area down in Washington? Well, anyway, we were taken down to a Liberty ship. That's what they were called that we had in those days. And went up on board, and now we had to learn how to throw my leg over the railing, grab the side, and climb down. We didn't jump into
the
water.
That's not that much better.
But that was and then we had to land in a small little boat. Well, I mean, we climbed down the ladder, down the side of the ship. This is how you
evacuate.
So we were just seated.
Then you had to climb back up to get into it, right?
Oh, no, thank goodness we didn't have to go back up. We had to learn to recognize all the different ranks of the, and then we were issued a gas mask and sent through a gas chamber and see if it worked, and mine leaked.
Oh, gee.
And I had to go back through it. Well, that was preparing.
For the worst.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever have to use your gas mask?
No, but I had to have it with me at all times. Always hanging from my belt.
Hmm.
Even when you had a long evening gown on?
Oh, well, no, we didn't do it. Not after I got overseas. Then we were 15 days on board ship. And it was, we were triply loaded with ammunition in the hold, but we didn't know that, and I'm glad I didn't know that.
Yeah. Real target.
One firecracker down there would taken care of that.
Well, you talked about having blackouts, right? Every night you had to black your window or a curtain
now,
or something?
It is now blackout time. That would come over the intercom. I have to say, I didn't like that. I don't like that intense. Anyway, everything was, the windows black, everything was covered up. And no light whatsoever. No smoking on deck, they would say. And so, yes, that was.
Well, and
that,
one time you came up on deck and you talked to someone.
It was so black. You can't imagine how black blackout is when you can't see. Anyway, we were on board ship. I was up on the deck, sitting down on the floor, and all of a sudden I realized somebody was sitting next to me.
Oh.
But I couldn't see him, and he was a very frightened young man. And I found that my understanding and knowledge of the Bible was a great help to me over there, and I used it a lot. Mm-hmm. I love the Bible, and I love the sense of safety. And we had this that comes with the understanding of protection. And I wanted to tell you about when I had graduated from Northwestern, and Reverend Anderson from the Presbyterian Church was the speaker at one of our talks. He was very comforting, telling us, "Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, thou art there." And he gave us that at graduation time. And that stayed with me all the time. It's a very comforting psalm. Okay, I'm going on too much.
So then, 15 days later, where did you land?
I landed in Naples.
Uh-huh.
And there were sunken ships all around in the harbor that had been bombed. The Fifth Army had gone through Naples and was still in Italy, but there had been a lot of warfare going on in there. So I was interviewed there because they'd have to place you there.
Yeah.
What you got in Naples. So my interviewer said, "Well, you look like you enjoy a good time." And I said, I don't
can't deny that.
Those words. And so, how would you like to go to the Isle of Capri? It's pronounced Capri, not Capri. Capri. Well, that's right across the bay there. I really didn't know what he was telling me. It was a very nice assignment. But first I have to tell you that night I slept in a hotel there close to the headquarters, where I could look down the hall and see the outside. It was had been bombed.
Oh.
But fortunately our part hadn't. So then I went over, got on a little, what do you call it?
Boat?
Yeah, well, boat, but and went over to the, rocked over to the Isle of Capri. And that's where I spent 14 weeks.
And and this was a base for officers to come when they're on.
Yeah, the 15th, 12th, and 15th Air Force, the pilots of the B-17s and the B-12, the 12, the flights. They would come for a rest, a weekend rest. And it was our job to see that they were entertained and go play tennis with them and take them. Well, we went horseback ride, not much of that, but a little bit. And we organized activities, but see, we were either musicians or dramatists or gals who could, physical education, athletic girls, organized games. And that's what we were there for. And we lived in the Quisasana Hotel. Oh my, you should see the hotel now.
It's still there.
Oh, it's still there, yes. It wasn't bombed or anything, but it was stripped down.
Oh.
Strictly stripped down.
You mean when you were there, it was stripped down?
Yeah, all the niceties that that beautiful hotel has were, but it was pretty nice for the guys to, the fellas would come over from Naples or from their bases, and they were sent there, as I say, for tenor.
So were these officers?
Officers and
enlisted
men.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, they were all of them. I happened to be assigned to the officers. It was just, it didn't mean a thing.
Yeah.
And every night you wore an evening gown to take to go out dancing with them, right?
Yeah, that was tough.
Was that part of your uniform? They gave you evening gowns?
I tell you, I brought one or two over, and I had to send home for Mom to send a couple more I had at home. Yeah. Well, when they, we would have a dance for them and bring Italian girls over from Naples. Oh, that was a prize. Oh, for those girls to get the chance to come over and be partners for our dances. Sometimes the fellas would grab me around the waist. It would be pretty hard on my formal. I had one kind of torn off.
Well, didn't some of the Italian girls wear their pretty nightgowns?
Yeah.
Instead of a
we
formal.
Had to watch that. They wanted to. They didn't have dance dresses, but they had nightgowns, and they didn't see much difference in them. And
they do that now too. I mean, well, not just Italians.
I was wondering what were so you had a rather nice assignment, but what were some of the things you missed from back home?
Oh, milk. Fresh milk, fresh straw, fresh. We had to eat army food, and we got the dehydrated stuff. It was remarkable what the chef could do with army stuff. But and they made good fresh bread every day, which was. But we had this stuff. We didn't have butter, and the army provided a jar like cheese whiz. Now I say the cheese whiz was invented at the army time to use as a substitute for butter. I can't find anybody at Kraft who could,
I mean, cheese whiz can be good.
I think it was really good.
Well, so was margarine invented back then?
No, we didn't have any margarine on the table. Yes, there was margarine, but we didn't. We had this better stuff. When I tell people that some wives of people I know, men who work at Kraft, they don't know anything about it. I want to look into that.
Google it. Yeah. Look it on the computer.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, spam and cheese whiz.
Well, you would never fix spam when we were growing up. Was that because of your overabundance of it?
Yes, yes.
We were grateful.
Yes, you remember that.
Huh? Well, when we went to Shabig, you said you'd never open Spam.
Uh-huh. Well, yes, we really had it fried for breakfast and put in a sandwich for lunch, and then with some kind of potatoes for supper.
Wow.
We didn't... it wasn't bad. I have to give the Italian. The Italian chefs were out in the kitchen of the hotel, using army food.
No pasta, and spaghetti sauce.
Oh yes.
And pizzas? Didn't you say you made pizzas?
Yes. I wasn't. I've had a rather sheltered life up to that point, and I haven't been around alcohol and people who get drunk, but there was an awful lot of drinking at night. I mean, in the evening with the fellas, and we were concerned about that. And so my co-partner, I had one other young woman who served with me in the hotel, and it was her idea to build a pizza oven out in the Quisasana garden, outdoors, and we had a chef who made pizza, and then he would cook it and You know, you put it on that long paddle and it would go away inside the pizza. I feel that the great popularity of pizza in this country now is due to that, the pizza that the men got, because it was new to them.
So you would serve food so they'd have something besides alcohol?
Yeah. My partner said that it's good to have food so they don't drink.
I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember hearing stories about you traveling around in a truck. You went to other bases, or what?
Well, after I had been there, I would like to, but I don't think we have time.
Got 2 hours.
We would present the meals in the dining room. See, and the men would have an excuse to put on their dress uniform and dress up and eat nicely. This was their rest leave. And so at Thanksgiving and Christmas time, we had a very lovely, very nicely served Thanksgiving dinner, and the men would be all, they called them their dress pinks.
They wore pink?
Well, it looked pink. Their uniform.
Oh.
Their dress uniform was a gabardine. Very, very handsome. It's not what they wear now. And it had a kind of a pink cast to it.
Hmm.
Well, they called it their dress pinks. They dress up and come down, so I'd sit at the table and eat with them. And then, while they were seated, my partner and I went around the dining room, and there were many, many tables of men in the dining room, and we would tell them what they could do, bring them up to date on activities at the island, and who was there, and where they could go to have fun.
Regale them with delightful conversation.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, we would talk to them, so... I remember, and I used to get to know the fellas, not each one. I knew them individually, but we always kept in a bunch.
Well, there was one that you had a certain closeness to, right?
Oh, was well.
what was that?
That's...
Come on.
It's just us.
Everybody was getting married.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So you wanted to join in?
Yeah. And the good, oh, he was a certain major, nice fellow.
Paul? From,
wait. Oh, no, that's another guy.
what's his name?
His name was, Cheepers, I can't remember. oh, come on.
Okay, we'll call him Bob.
We'll come back.
Okay.
I didn't have
so
awful.
So, what happened?
Donald Colmer, C-O-L-M-E-R. Yeah, he on our trip, we all got to go to. Isn't this kind of jumbling out?
No, it's only what we want to hear. It's just us.
But we all got it. The Army was good to us, gave us all a chance to go visit Switzerland and see Switzerland.
Hmm.
So we all got on a very slow moving train and we went up to Milano. And I guess it was Milan where we booked up a bus and we went to Switzerland. And,
for a weekend or
uh-huh,
a week? Or...
Yeah, a week. Huh. And it's at that time Mr. Colmer bought a beautiful diamond ring for me.
Oh!
And so I had a diamond ring and I was officially engaged. But I think I knew in the back of my mind. He's a dear man, honest, good.
Where was he from?
But you didn't want to marry him.
Yeah, I didn't think it. He was from Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
He talked like that.
He was crazy about me. And he just...
Well, how much time... So, how long were you there in Concrete?
In total?
Yeah. I mean, serving as a Red Cross girl.
Oh, well, it was over. Just under 2 years.
But were you there the whole time?
In different areas.
So where did you go after Capri?
After Capri, then, I made that trip up to Paris, but that was another thing. Oh, we after I'd been there 14 months on the island and doing this various kinds of what we call work, it was. We were up late at night and dancing all night. That
and
was
singing.
Hard.
You were singing, right?
Yes, and singing.
Performing.
Having programs and putting on programs. Then we formed a show. Red Cross Now is at your side with something worse than cyanide. Oh, our corn is green. That was our opening number in our show. And we used the talent of the people. There was somebody from New York and somebody from... there were about 12 of us. And these girls had written this show on their way overseas. So the show was already written, and they picked up talent like me, and they asked me to join them, and I sang and danced, and yes, I used to dance.
Oh, I bet. Twinkle toes.
I'm going to blow my nose outside.
Thank you.
Oh, we went on a... So we took this show that we had put together, the girls had from there, somebody from Los Angeles and so forth, and we went on tour with the show. And excuse me. We toured in the back end of a truck.
So you went to different bases then?
Yeah.
Around
Capri.
Capri.
I mean, where were
you? So I went over to Naples.
Yeah.
We put the show together, and from Naples we toured up. And as I say, in the back end of a truck,
yeah,
you know what a 6x6,
yeah,
and cold and wet and dusty. And then we toured the bases, Army bases and Air Force, different ones, and put on the show, would dance with the guys.
Wow.
Then we'd go off to where we had prearranged sleeping facilities, and we would stay there the night, get up in the morning, get back on the truck, and go to another base, put on the show. You follow me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see anybody you knew?
Yes, I did.
The organist, Leo, right?
Oh, yes.
From Wilmette, the organist from Wilmette Church?
Yes, I was singing in the Wilmette Christian Science Church, and Leo's number came up. He was the organist. So he had to leave, but I was still there in Wilmette. But when I went, somebody said to me, oh, just think, you might run into Leo somewhere. Well, the war was spread out all over Europe and South Pacific. But one day when I was on Capri, and I was talking to one of the airmen, he said to me, we've got the neatest choir back at our base. And I said, oh, you do? How nice. And just kind of making conversation. And I said, who directs it? Staff Sergeant Leo Hine. Well, that was my Leo from Wilmette. I was so excited. So I was able to hop a plane, and I flew down to Foggia, where Leo was. And I visited him at his base.
And he was surprised.
Yeah. He was so, and I sang with his choir. Mm. And we went around one Sunday, gave several Sunday services. Oh, yes. I got such a nice letter from Leo. He really was, it meant a lot to him to see me. And yeah, it was
sure.
A very happy.
Yeah. And she met my Christian Science teacher, Helen Moon's father, Colonel Christian Berry.
Oh, Colonel Christian Berry.
Oh.
Yes, he's a Christian Scientist. And he was in headquarters in Naples. So if I ever found anybody who might be interested in talking to a Christian Science chaplain, I told them about Chris Christian Berry, a wonderful, wonderful man. Mm-hmm. Oh, so sweet.
Well, I'm sorry, what were you going to say? I was just wondering, so then when the war ended, how did you...
Go home?
Well, no, how did you hear about it? Or
well, that was interesting because it ended in Europe first. And so the Italians and the people were excited about it. But our boys were not excited. Because they said, well, gee whiz, then we have to go, we've got to go down to the South Pacific. Mm. We can't go home, we're going down to the Pacific. Yeah, I had an airman, Benny Benowitz. He wanted to talk to me privately over there in Capri. Barb, can I tell you? Okay, Benny. And he was a gunner, the belly gunner, the one underneath the belly of the ship of a B-17, kind of precipitous place to be. And he was feeling lonesome and sad, and he said, and then just think, when we get through here, then we got to go over to the South Pacific, we'll never get home. And I said, I don't know, this was inspiration, I think, that came to me. I said, just think, Benny, the war can stop just like that. Something will be, and then you won't have to go. And that was, just came to my thought. Well, that's the way it did stop, mm-hmm. when the bomb was dropped over in the Pacific. But I was walking down via Napoli in Naples, via Roma in Naples, and a truck went by full of soldiers. And all of a sudden I heard somebody yell, Barb, hey Barb, yeah. And it was Benny. I'm going home. I'm going home. There went Benny, the fellow who was so feeling so badly that he wasn't going to be able to go home. But so I always remember. I think he was in Chicago. I never ran into him. I did run into people, a few that I knew from overseas.
It's got to be a nickname. Benny Benowitz.
Nobody
would really name
Benjamin.
Her.
Benjamin Benowitz.
So then eventually you came back to Chicago? Is that where you returned to?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I hadn't sung or practiced, but I had graduated as a voice major soprano.
But you sang over in Italy.
Yeah, but I didn't practice, and it was a tough life.
Yeah.
And so my mother was my best booster, and I mean, here's one place. We sang in Victory Stadium, 8,000 men out there. Mm. And I came out on a platform, outdoors, and, that's another story. And what were they? 8,000 men and four Yankee Queens. Yankee Queen, that would be called. Well, okay, I came back home, and I wanted to start singing again.
Were you a celebrity when you came home?
Oh, not particularly. Just me. And Mom read about it in the Monitor. Oh, she thought, oh, the Monitor. She read that Maggie Tate was coming to Juilliard in New York to teach. Mom got on the telephone and she called. She got in touch with the Parnassus Club, which is a club for fine arts girls to stay, where my Aunt Ella had stayed in New York. And she got me into the club so I could stay there. I went to New York, I went to Juilliard, I went to Juilliard when it was located at 125th Street and Broadway in New York. So I was at the club at 115th Street and Riverside Drive, and Juilliard was up here at 120. And I studied with Maggie Tate and others, and so I was there until I had a good voice teacher I had located and found. I don't know whether this teacher, I guess it was his idea for me to have a debut concert. Oh, I left out
get your book out here.
Yeah.
Well, so wait a minute.
Wait, would you leave out, Mr.?
The man who wanted to sponsor me.
Yeah, okay, what was that about?
Okay, but before you get there, there was this one I mean, how long a space were you at home before you left for New York?
Oh, not very long, 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It was in New York when I, so I went to New York and I lived in the Parnassus Club and studied with Maggie Tate, who is a very famous singer. She was very encouraging to me. I got a letter in the mail from somebody in Detroit. Now, I don't know how he got my name or my number, but he was a Christian Scientist, and he wanted recordings of Christian Science solos. Now there is a plethora. I mean, we've got all kinds of recordings like that they're doing in Boston. But at that time, in 1950 or whatever it was, there were none. And I recorded solos, Christians, religious, sacred solos that he would ask me to record. And he paid me handsomely. And
what's his name? Do you know his name?
Mr. James, J-A-M-E-S, James, Robert James.
But he was in Detroit and you were in New York,
yeah.
So you didn't really...
So I never really saw him.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and I used to go up, those of us at the club would get be asked to come and sing at a summer resort, Lake Minnewaska, up above New York. And it was run by, not Quakers. Yes, I think they were Quakers. Lovely, lovely people and a beautiful resort. And I used to go up there on weekends and sing and give concerts. All I can think of is he must have heard about me up there, but I never, never felt that I met him. But he asked me, until it got to the point where my voice teacher thought it would be a good idea if I sang, had a debut concert. Well, when you do that as a student in New York, you study and you work and at Town Hall, Times Hall, and then you go and give this full-length formal concert before the public, you sell tickets, hope they buy them, and then you go before the critics. And I've forgotten, I have to say I'm very proud of the remark, the reviews that
I've seen. Do you remember any of them?
Oh yes, I have them all in the book.
What were some of the choice ones?
Well,
they said, I love the one
appealing, timble, persuasive.
Timble.
Oh yes, my voice. I was a coloratura, and I really was and I had a wonderful accompanist, a friend called John Lamontagne, and he helped me a lot.
Well, and from New York Times, a true and ringing high C. She sang with ease and skill. Her attacks were clear, her scales nicely articulated, her phrasing precise.
Is this your mother? No.
As the New York Times.
Well, so that was quite something to get such great reviews on your debut
concert. Yeah, it was. It was. One night I came home from, I don't know where I'd been, because I was teaching violin on the side. In a private girls' school to get a little aside extra money. And I picked up the evening paper, and there was my picture and my announcement. And my friend said, Barb, who do you know that you got such good publicity about you? I said, I don't know anybody. I don't know how that got there. But I was under contract with Columbia Concerts for this. So the Columbia Concerts agency ran the...
Oh, ran your debut concert?
Yeah. And, it's hard to put it all in 2 minutes.
Highly polished, brilliant bravura, fluent agility, excellent staccato, clear and bird-like trills.
Oh, bird-like! Oh, I beat the bird.
It's been something to hear.
Well, it was a thrilling experience. It was happy all the way through.
And she filled the, I don't know if you filled the house, but you got...
all my church people
huge
came.
Huge crowd.
My agent.
Four bought tickets?
Yes!
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. They weren't, they were $95, but they, yeah. What were they, $1.20? Well, that's what you paid for
well,
a ticket
yeah.
at that time.
And
but it was fun. They were so nice to all come.
Well, and so then you kind of made a name for yourself in New York, and you stayed
yeah,
there.
That was February 28, 1950.
Yeah,
450
people
1950.
There.
Yeah.
That's what this program says.
Well, it was a happy, fun time, and I'm grateful I had it.
These are the cards from she got. Dozens and dozens of roses. And where was the, oh, 3 dozen from the Detroit office, the
oh, that's her him.
Silent admirer who, he paid for the whole debut concert, was it?
Well, we sold enough tickets to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But he offered to.
Hmm.
And then he wanted to buy my dress. And but I never saw him. See,
he didn't come to your wedding? Ridley thought he came to your wedding, but.
Yes. Sarah Webb thought he came. I didn't invite him. Or maybe I did. Oh, I did, yeah. Because he gave me that silver vase.
Oh.
Yeah, I invited him, but I don't know. It was really a very lovely friendship. Not the hanky-panky things that you read about.
Not a sugar daddy.
Yeah, no, uh-uh. But finally, after then my young man, Philip Smith, who I had been seeing, finally broke down and asked me to marry him.
So this was your
did
the
that
concert
take
was
some assistance from you.
Ah, he's a Caltech man, engineer.
Well, yeah, you have to tell the story you just told us at lunch. Where,
oh no!
Why not? So the concert was in February.
Yeah, March, April.
You're big guns in New York and. Dad has a conference with you on just how important is this career.
Who is this guy anyway? But Dad was very pleased. Yeah, he's a nice guy. He was reading in the church. And,
in Long Island, right?
And he was a full scholarship man at Caltech. That says a lot. Have a full scholarship. So he was no dummy, and so it was.
The Hopgoods introduced you, right?
Yes, Dee and Charles Hopgood, my dear friends. Uh-huh, they just thought that I would make a go of it with him. So he liked me.
So it was sometime that spring he got around to, after your concert in February, he got around to asking to
yeah.
marry, or how did he put it? When are we going
to... You don't want to get married, do you?
Yeah. Or what date?
It was about like that. No. No. He wanted to be sure that I was not completely enamored of this career business.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted a girl to be a wife and a mother and a family, the regular kind. And he wanted to be very sure that we both agreed on that. And so one night, when, as I was telling the girls, well, we were having a soda somewhere, and I thought, this is it. He told me he had something important to ask me. Well, would you think it was a question? So there he was going to, and what does he want to know? Is this career going to be a full-time thing? Or what is it? And when I found out that that was the question, I got up and walked out of the restaurant.
And where did you go?
Flounced out.
I went out in the car, and I sat there, and I said, what do you want to know that for, you know? And so he came and out to the car, and he said, well, when do you want to get married? That's the way he proposed. When do you want it? I said, do you know what you're saying? And he said, yes, he did. And so we were out in Forest Hills, Long Island, and I was staying with the Frenches, good friends. And so he took me home, and I went and woke up the Frenches and told them that he proposed.
That's big news.
He didn't have a ring on him at the time.
No.
Yeah. When did he get around to that?
Well, he went down to the jeweler there. We were right there by the, what's the tennis club at Forest Hills?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right there,
that's what it's called,
Forest Hills Tennis.
So there was a jeweler there, and he used to give me lovely, lovely presents. So I was afraid. I don't have very beautiful long fingers for a beautiful ring, so I was afraid he'd give me too big a ring. But it's just right, and I have it on my finger still. But he got the jeweler, and we went over there and had it fitted.
And then didn't mess around, got married a few months later.
Huh? No, we didn't mess around because we wanted to be married in the little, it's a darling little church.
It's a Presbyterian?
Well, we had the Presbyterian minister where I sang. He married us, Dr. McGall. But it was a little forest, what is it called? It's like the little Kenilworth Union.
Like a chapel?
Yeah, a little chapel in Forest Hills. Yeah. So we found that the only time we could get it was just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Otherwise, June and July were all taken up.
Oh, yeah.
So June 10th,
1950.
Yeah. So my friends gathered around and helped me, and see, my mother was not with me at that time.
That's a high school picture. Oh, actually, a picture I really like is, look at the look on Mom.
Oh, it's so demure.
Yeah, in high school. No, is that college?
Yeah,
college.
I think that's college. That's my mom and dad. So we got everything, and the Frenches said I could have, asked me to have a reception at their house in Forest Hills, which was lovely. And John and Paul came. John,
are you a accompanist?
Paul played the organ. The boys that I know so well, and my voice teacher sang.
So it was from the tape. Or there was a different voice teacher there.
No, my one from New York.
Maggie Tate. Ted Webb. Yes,
Ted Webb. He was my voice teacher.
Yeah.
So I have pictures out in the yard. It was a very folksy. It turned out to be a lovely day. It was a hot summer day. And so just spontaneously, when you think how they arrange it nowadays, the Frenches put out card tables and chairs, and so we all ate outside.
Yeah.
Had chicken salad and lots of good stuff. And Philip, my Philip, had an Oldsmobile commercial.
Convertible. Ooh.
Mm. We took off in that. Mm-hmm. And his friends, his not so friends, had attached something that made it go bang bang when we took off.
Oh, that's fun. He didn't like that.
Well,
so then, I mean, just keep going here. You stayed in New York for. Where did you move to then?
Oh, then we went to Bayside.
Yeah.
And Rindy came along the next year.
Yeah.
51, right?
50. Yeah. Uh-huh. In September, and then and Phil was with Eastman Kodak all the time, and they came and asked him, would he like to be a manager of the Chicago the lab for
processing
developing
lab.
The Eastman film. So they printed it there.
It was right after you bought the cabin on Shabib, right?
Well, we bought that later, yeah. Then we wanted to go, where am I? And it was still in New York. And then we came here, and Phil said, the lab is that now close to South Chicago. So the Kodak people lived down that way. Well, I had come from Evanston, north of Chicago. So I said, well, let's look up there too, see if we've. And so he was willing to look and found a place to rent for a year because we didn't know where they were going to stay. Then we bought a house and we became North Evanston people.
Well, so you rented a place in Evanston then?
Yeah, we rented the house, the first house, the first time. Because I think Phil wasn't sure that he was going to stay or what
being a California boy,
But
he wasn't tempted to go back out to California?
No. No, we always like to tell people he's been here now more than he'd been in California.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
But I was proud of his Caltech. It's a very fine school. And to be on a full scholarship for him was really something.
Yeah.
So then what happened?
Then came Brindy, and then
came Holly.
Wait, Brindy was born in New York. Then Holly was born in Illinois, right?
No, she was born in New York too.
So Melody was the first Illinois.
Yes.
Then of course.
And then then Phil said, "Well, 4 is a nice even number. We ought to have 4." That's why we had Heather. She's just an even number.
And they kept trying for a boy, so.
Yes.
I was supposed to be Stuart.
We had a wonderful 25th wedding anniversary party, and the girls. I don't think I can quote the song, can you?
"'Twas not so long ago that Ma was Pa was Mama's beau."
And for how many long years they tried to have a boy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But they got us instead.
Uh-huh.
That was so cute.
So cute.
So my girls have been such a joy ever since.
Well, were you singing in the Wilma Church as soon as you came back?
Yes, they took me back. How about this, though? They felt they had to audition me.
Wow.
And
probably in their bylaws.
Yeah. I tell you, I said, the law at that time was that any serviceman would be taken back to his job.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever he did, he would be taken back. And so I quoted that to them. I really didn't know.
I guess they took you.
Well, is that enough? You're a good interviewer.
Well, this is good. Have we left any out any stories or anything that you want to toss back in? But you've covered a lot.
Well, we never really covered the boy back in Evanston at Northwestern. The boy she left behind, who, I don't know if you were engaged, but you were pretty, you were engaged then? Right. That was Paul.
Yeah, he was a pretty steady guy and a very sweet. His name is Paul, and he was my boyfriend all when I was in Northwestern, and we did stuff together. He was an outstanding musician. I met him there, and music school. And he was his one of 13 children. Mm. And they were all brilliant. That's the amazing thing. They weren't Dumkovs.
It was a Polish family, right?
A Russian.
Oh, Russian.
Yeah.
But you left him to go serve your country and ended it before you left?
Well, he was pretty pokey.
Well, you wrote to him for a while, right? While you were over there? Or
a little while.
Yeah.
I sort of missed him. We were both in the same city. I heard he taught or he wrote or somehow when I was touring around with a show.
He was in Italy.
Oh, he was overseas. But he was used for his language ability because he spoke Russian and German. Yes, he was very interesting, very loving, very affectionate, but it wasn't right. It wasn't.
No, I think you landed with the right one.
Oh, thank you. Interviewer. It added a little spice and color.
Yeah.
So
a little flavor.
And his mother's name was Barbara.
Ooh, that's too weird.
But he was Well, isn't that about it?
Thank you for sharing all this.
Are they going to listen to it in the library?
Well, lots of people. I think she said it might be on the web. So.
Oh, stop!
Anyway, so I guess we'll sign off here then. Okay.
Yes. Thank you for your nice questions and your interest.
Fun to hear the story.
Been a pleasure.
Precious girls.
I like to.
Being in the kind of work, I had many different kinds of people that I met and I talked to. And we were over in Leghorn. And we stopped in Livorno, it's called over there. And I met that there was a, can you imagine? It was a black. It's hard to realize that there were
black soldiers?
Yeah, no, whole troops of them.
Yeah.
They were separated. It's just hard to believe. Anyway, I did. And I remember being there with him and dancing with him and talking and having a good time. Well, then, now we have to update to President Clinton. Mm-hmm. And Clinton, yeah, there he is. Good, we found it.
What was the year Clinton started? Oh, 1997.
Yeah, and there he is.
Vernon Baker?
Wait, what did Clinton do?
He wanted to honor these men. They hadn't been recognized. And so this is the one who's still living, and that was the man who was killed, whose wife, Arlene Fox, is. Her husband.
So he was never honored because he was a black soldier, and Clinton felt that they should be honored. So what did he do about it?
So he called them to Washington, and so I wrote to her.
You read this in the paper?
No, this is a friend of mine saw it either on TV or
it was a Nightline.
Yeah, and she told me about it. It was Connie Moore. She is clever. She got her address. She saw the story of this woman being honored by
her husband's.
Yeah. So she got the address of the woman. She lives in Texas. So I wrote to her and told her how I had felt I had been over there, had been in Livorno, and been there where her husband was.
Huh.
And I told her about what we did, and I said, and they were such a happy bunch. I remember that about it. It was so much fun being with them, and we danced with them and so forth. Well, then she wrote back to me, and she said, of all the things, and she tells about how she was honored, my letter meant the most to her.
Do you have her letter?
Yeah.
You want to read it?
Of all the letters I have received, none touched me so deeply as yours. And I always close with that, and that's...
Do you want to read the whole letter?
Oh, should I?
Yeah.
All right.
My dear Mrs.
Smith, of all the letters I have received, none touched me so deeply as yours. And I have to say I wrote to a lot of parents, but this is this. I can't thank you enough for sharing with me your interesting life of hardship, laughter, and fun during those war-torn years. I am sure your efforts were well received. I applaud you. In that time, many of us wanted to do something. I went back into nursing at the VA hospital. We brought in ambulance after ambulance of broken bodies and unsettled minds. I stayed for 28 plus years. So I know you and your friends' smiles, laughter, and songs were as healing as any treatment that we could give. We as a family never needed a medal to be proud of John as a husband, a father, or a soldier. Now the rest of the country can share in that pride. He loved his country and did his duty as he saw it. Like you, I too know that he's safe in our Father's care. The ceremony in Washington was truly memorable. It evoked many memories and tears. You are fortunate to have such a lovely family. I sent her that Christmas picture. Your letter and picture will have a special place in our memory book. My two grandchildren in their junior year at college and my daughter followed me into nursing and is an anesthetist. Thank you again. Happiness to you in the new year. Sincerely, Arlene Fox, Houston, Texas. So that was pretty nice to get
that. Yeah.